brought to you by the world-famous Hustler Casino in Los Angeles, California, and PokerRags.us. This is Sessions, Season 6, the final chapter. Can we go from rock bottom, buried in debt, homeless, and in desperate need of therapy, all the way back to flush, simply by never giving up, no matter what? I don't know, but this is the year we find out, so buckle up for one last ride. This is going to be a public drop, and I'm going to start with a real-time update. So, for those who don't know, typically I just tell the story of my life on about a one-week lag. And occasionally, I fast-forward to real-time when I'm recording and do real-time updates. I'm going to do that right now. It's 11:43 a.m. on Thirsty Thursday, December 7th, 2023. I'm in my apartment in San Diego. Sometimes I record here. It's got a tall ceiling, so it echoes quite a bit. But I do have a pillow on top of my little mini soundproof device. And I typically record in Long Beach, where I work and stay most of the time. The reason I'm doing a real-time update is some crazy shit going on. If you're on Twitter, I guess it's called X now, and you follow Westside Wesley, he's on a rampage trying to expose cheaters. And it's tough because a lot of it is translated to English. And sometimes he's just writing or speaking in English, and that's obviously not his first language. But it's the real reason it's tough is that I was brought up in cheating allegations. What was that, just a year ago? I guess it was just a year ago. And it was honestly a pretty traumatic experience for me. I never cheated. I wouldn't cheat. I'm the opposite of that. I'm self-destructive. That's what I fight. I fight being self-destructive. So on my best days, I'm selfless. That's as good as it's going to get for me. And that's why I struggle financially despite making a lot of money. And that's okay. I am who I am. And anyways, it brings back bad memories. But also, some of the stuff that's being shared is pretty fucking crazy. So I am just taking the approach of not weighing in until the dust settles. I watched Doug Polk's video last night. He is funny and entertaining. He didn't really do any investigative work. I assume someone's going to break everything down and maybe there'll be a conclusion. Hopefully there'll be a conclusion of who cheated and who didn't. It seems pretty clear that there were marked cards at a home game. And obviously, Hustler Casino Live is being brought into this because Mars plays on the show and he's the number one person being accused, and people are accusing Sia too. And I don't know. I don't love it, but I'm just going to wait. I'm going to let these fucking investigators who need the clicks do their work, and then I'll check out the content later. But as of right now, it's just weird. I spent so much time with Sia and have trusted her always and, done a lot of exchanges with her and gone to many dinners with her and consider her a friend and have spent a lot less time with Mars. And I don't even know if anyone is actually accusing Sia, but I know her name is being dragged through the mud by the internet trolls. So it's just a weird time for me. I'm just kind of laying back and seeing what happens. And when I can come up with my own conclusion, that's when I'll actually speak out on it. hopefully on her behalf. And yeah, I don't like owe anything to anyone, but you know, it's just a weird fucking time. And anyways, I'm gonna record this drop, and then I'm gonna produce it, take a shower, get dressed, head up to the Hustler for Thirsty Thursday. I'm gonna play in a pretty good game. Something that happens during these cheating scandals is less people want to play at the Hustler and on stream, even though there's never been any proof of any cheating on the stream. There was that one weird fucking hand with Robbie and Garrett, and yeah, but pretty much everyone plays there and no one ever feels like there's cheating going on, and I certainly don't ever in the games I'm in. I've been cheated several times in my career, and I'm usually pretty on it. I know. But anyways, others don't. And so just when things are going well with getting people to the Hustler and playing on stream, they back off a little bit. They're suddenly not so interested when there's a new scandal and people are talking about death threats and murder cases. That's not fun stuff, is it? Poker's supposed to be fun, and that's not fun. And if you're noticing my voice sounding like, maybe it sounds like I'm hungover, I'm not. I coached two basketball games last night. My son's second basketball game and my daughter's first basketball game. And that's why my voice sounds like that. And the patrons will hear about those games. And who are the patrons? Those are the people that go to patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer and sign up. And then they get an RSS feed. And then say you listen to podcasts on your iPhone. You just connect your RSS feed. The steps are very simple. And then you get all my private content where I really spill my guts. And there's well over 1,000 hours of that stuff on that RSS feed. And so the people that have done that, or the people that will do that between now and next Monday, they'll hear about those games. There were some interesting moments in them. I am a very involved single father and a very passionate one as well. So on Monday, I typically drop a lead up. What I do is I talk about everything that happened from the conclusion of the previous Max Payne Monday up until I'm usually in Long Beach about to jump in the shower, get dressed, and head to the next one. And I just recap that week in my life. Well, this Monday, I was unable to do that because I was out with some patrons, including Silent Sound Guy and Peter the Wreck and NTD. And they kept me out until the sun came up Monday morning. So I had to get some sleep before I played on stream. But then Tuesday, I did record that lead up to the week. And typically on Tuesdays, I record a session review because the Monday session is fresh in my mind. And I go through, I take notes, and then I review it. Well, this week's been a little bit delayed, not only because I went out with those guys and my girlfriend, and we stayed out super late, but also because last week was super high stakes week 3. And I commentated 5 shifts, and it was a good experience, and I needed the money, and I do take a lot of pride in my commentary. It was nice to get a lot of practice in, and kind of I don't know. I people told me I did a good job, and that feels good. But yeah, it set me back because it was just, I usually commentate 1 session per week. And it's just kind of set me back, and I'm trying to play catch up here. So that's why I'm recording this session review, which would typically come out on a Tuesday. And these are typically private as well. Occasionally they're public. And yeah, I think I want to make this one public because I wanted to speak out on that cheating, what? The accusations. It's wild. It's fucking wild. It would be nice if someone organized all of it, and and investigated it. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen properly, but if anyone is being accused wrongfully, if they didn't cheat and they're being accused, like if Sia never cheated and her name's being dragged through the mud, then I feel really bad for her or whoever else is being accused that didn't actually cheat. And of course, the people that did cheat need to be outed. And that's all I'm going to say on that right now. I'm going to take a sip of this coffee, and then I'm going to tell you about the Max Payne Monday session on December 4th. Hold on. So I went in kind of on a bender. I don't stay up till the sun comes up too often anymore. Probably over 1,000 times in my life, but I don't do it too often anymore. So I kind of had that feeling, you know, when you drink a ton and you have fun and then the next day you're drinking again, you have that bender feeling where you're feeling no pain and you're kind of walking a tightrope. Like, am I going to get too drunk? Am I going to pawn it all off? Will I play good? Because I'm not feeling any pain or any stress or any, you know, concern over my finances as I'm sitting at this table with thousands of dollars. So let's see what happened after we talk about the lineup real quick. And the one seat is Crazy Drew. He loves the one seat. He's been doing very, very well on our show lately. And we always sit next to each other and have some good banter, I think. I'm in the two seat. The three seat is Nikos. This guy is funny. He typically takes mushrooms and edibles, and sometimes he drinks. And on this day, he was drinking a ton for whatever reason. Just, you know, something inside told him to drink two whiskey and Cokes at a time. And so Nikos is hammered, or he will be hammered soon during the stream. The four seat is Yara, the Destroyer. Yara is back from China. She's played on the show a couple times. She's great. She does her hype videos quickly, and she responds quickly, and she shows up on time, and she smiles, and she's funny, and she's someone that's going to find a seat often on our show if she wants one. So is the guy on her left, DK, the GOAT. This guy has so much gamble. He's also, not only does he just have a ton of gamble, and when things are going well, he might just call with a really bad hand to try and bust a good hand. That's the luxury of being wealthy, is you don't have to play poker to try and win every single session. Sometimes you just want to bust somebody, and so you're willing to double them up, take the worst of it, just in case you might get lucky. And also, DK is very funny, and he's a friend, and I like drinking with him and joking with him. And seat six is Dr. P. And, oh, I should go back to seat five. I can tell DK wants to win on this day. So even if you are wealthy, if you're on a losing streak, you want to turn it around. And I just know that going in, that he wants to win. So he's going to be playing a little bit differently than normal. Seat six is Dr. P. He's also on a bit of a losing streak, mostly due to just running really bad. And he's just a really genuine guy, and he plays all the different shows. I think he's played every night of the week on Hustler Casino Live. He's played a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and a Friday. In the seventh seat is the out-of-towner, the guy who was built for Max Payne Monday, DQ. And his thing has always been Max Payne run at once. And so we run at once on Max Payne Monday, kind of in his honor. When we started branding the show, it's interesting. The way it came about was I decided to start playing on stream. I'd been in content for a long time. I was always anonymous. Even when I was a commentator at Hustler Casino Live, I was anonymous. They would show, at the beginning of every show, they would show if Tuckman was in the booth, they'd show his picture. If Raver was in the booth, they'd show his picture. If I was in the booth, they wouldn't show my picture. And I always had avatars that weren't me on social media or 2+2 poker forums. I just never, ever wanted to be in the public eye whatsoever. I'm more of an artist, a content creator, but I'm trying to make a really tough comeback in life. I hit a rock bottom, and that's no fun, and that's no joke. Some people will say, oh, this is rock bottom. And that's funny sometimes, but there's a real rock bottom that you can hit where you don't know anything. You don't know if you even want to live. That's just reality. And then hopefully you start thinking correctly. Of course you do. It's your one shot at this thing. And you also find yourself at the bottom of a giant mountain, if you will. And you got to try and get back to the top of it. And it's going to take time. And for me, I hit the bottom of 2017. And I'm maybe halfway up that mountain. And I've been working pretty much every single day since then on so many different projects. I have this podcast. I commentate. I'm a host at two casinos now. I'm also a game runner for the show. I have my startup, Poker Rags, and you know, those are all my ventures that can yield me income in addition to playing poker, and then also a very involved father, as mentioned. So, yeah, that's I don't know. That's a tangent. We're just going through the lineup. And anyways, I started. I decided to get over the hump, to get up that hill, to actually start making some progress. I probably need to play on stream. It'll be good for my podcast. People will watch it and say, oh, I want to hear this guy's thoughts. Why does he play like that? And also, it's going to be a good game. You know, it's going to be how poker used to be. 10, 20, 40, I used to play this at the Commerce all the time. All the fucking time, and games were good. That's dead. The grinders ruined it. They fucking ruined it. The grinders blame it on the game runners. That's false. It's the grinders who ruined it. If the grinders weren't ruining the games, there'd be no market for game runners. You think every recreational player wants to go to some sketchy hotel suite or office building and play for big money with no security or no regulation? No. But they do it because the grinders came and made playing in a casino absolutely fucking miserable with their seat changes, their staring, their tanking, their fucking grinder behavior. So they ruined the big stuff. All the big stuff's going to be private forever. It is. It's the only way to keep the grinders out. And you can have private games at casinos now, and that's what a stream game is. And so I decided to play. And I knew from being in the booth that the chat likes VPIP. I always VPIP high. I told people, I've been playing, I've played, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of hours of Nolan Hold'em. And I've said that I've played more hands than I've folded. No one believed me until I started playing on stream. I'm like, oh, you actually do. But I found myself in these games that were soft. But there were snipers in there, and there was one sniper one night while I was giving all the action, putting on a show, and after the stream, Ryan Feldman came down, and I was like, how the fuck you put this sniper in with us? And he kind of said, you want to build the lineups? And I think he was probably saying, like, it's not as easy as you think. And I said, yeah, I'll fucking build them. And since then, it's been my mission to take this dusty, it was just a 10-20 game that no one really watched on Mondays. I wanted to make it popular. I wanted to, you know, bring diversity, in, starting with women in the lineups. And I also, Raver was the commentator, and he wanted to brand it on the same night where I slow rolled Aaron Queskin. And slow rolling is fun and funny. And people take poker too seriously. But it's fucking great. When you've been around as long as I have, slow rolls are fun. And I slow rolled them with aces. I took 48 seconds, I think it was, to call us all in with aces. And that's when we decided to make it a show. And I believe DQ was in the chat, and his thing has always been Max Payne. And so maybe DQ plus some other chat pros said, let's make it Max Payne Monday. Raver said, that's what it is. And in DQ's honor, we're only going to run it once. And you know, that's what the viewers want to see is blood. So That's how that came about. And DQ gets to play anytime he wants. And he's been a lot less splashy than he used to be. He's a much tougher player than he used to be. And he's been winning a bunch, if not on stream, then off. And anyways, he's a pretty good dude all around. And he's been an asshole to me several times, but that's the poker table. Is people use tactics, and sometimes people project it. But overall, he's a really good dude. Seat 8 is Nick Vertucci, co-owner of High Stakes Poker Productions, which brings you Hustler Casino Live. Nick is the one guy that's allowed to play tight, but yeah, he owns the show. That's the real world. And also, he's funny and self-deprecating. And, you know, he's not like fucking 3-betting, 4-betting every single time he's entering a pot. He's playing kind of chill. And then in the 9th seat is someone I've never met. His name is Gene. I just named him Mean Gene. I don't know. Hopefully he likes it. And he is Yara's friend. And that's the lineup. Another sip of coffee, and I'll actually get into the poker. 20-some minutes in. This is a Spewy podcast. If you like Spewy podcasts, this might be for you. If you don't, it's probably not. Okay. So, the first thing that happens is Mean Gene squeezes, and I just call with a suited ace out of position. This is kind of a stream play. If you're playing a tournament, you're probably going to be re-raising or folding in the blinds, or if you know you're really a fucking tryhard, I'm not. I want to be calling. I'm going to be gambling. Let's bring in other people. Let's go. Let's go to the flop. And so three of us see the flop, and it comes Jack 7-7, two hearts. I have ace 6 of diamonds. We check to Mean Gene, and he continuation bets. I call with a player behind. That player folds. Okay. The turn gives me the nut flush draw. I believe it was the queen of diamonds. I check. He checks back. The river is a small card, and it brings in the front door flush. So the draw I did not have, the hearts. So then I bet $1,200, and Gene thinks for a second and folds. And what's interesting is Charlie was commentating on this night, Charlie Wilmoth, a very studied player. And he said, I don't know if this folds out too many hands that are better. And I found that interesting. It was Jack 7-7, two hearts, and the guy continuation bet, and he doesn't know me, right? And we have no history. So I don't have like the worst image. I have the worst image with anyone that knows me. They know I bluff, float, all that shit relentlessly. This guy doesn't know me. So when I call with player behind, Jack 7-7, two hearts, I'm going to have a flush draw, a jack, or a seven. That's the rule, right? And so when the front door flush comes in and I value bet, at that point I think it's trips or a flush. I think it actually reps plenty and it folds out plenty. It's interesting that Charlie didn't think so. And then I just I dialed up a cooler. And you can go a long time without these automatic hands. These automatic hands where you get all the money. I had pocket kings. I was up against tens and ace king. And the ace king might even have been suited. We got it in three ways and I held. And suddenly I'm up a bunch to start the show. And that feels good. And then I got ace king suited right after that. And Mean Gene made it a bunch and I just jammed on him. He had king queen offsuit. He put in about 40% of his stack. I didn't know that he would be folding to my jam, but you'll take it. You know, you just win 2K for nothing. And then another thing, Charlie was talking about the 5-5-10 game on the casino floor. I like that. That's a game I built. That's a game I host. And I think it's good that it gets some shine, not just for selfish reasons, but I believe it's a great game. There was no 5-10. At the Hustler, there was 5-5 sometimes when I got hired. And then when I worked with Sean Yapel to build a bigger game, I said, what we're going to do is there's a 5-5, so I want to make a 5-5-10. The 5-5 is 300 to 1,000. I'll make the 5-5-10 300 to 1,500. This way, if a game ever wants to convert, it can. And this is important when you're building at a casino. Don't try and just, oh, let's run a 25-50. Good luck with that. And now 5-5-10 is woven into the fabric of the Hustler Casino poker. It just, it's a regular game. It goes every single day, multiple tables, and yeah, you gotta keep the min buy small, even though some won't like that, and the cap smallish, 150 big blinds, but also people straddle, so then it becomes 75 big blinds. So what? It encourages people to get the money in. It protects the players that aren't so skilled, and the skilled players have an edge, but it's not a huge one. Good. It's sustainable, and I really liked Charlie talking about it. Okay, the first stroke of negative variance, I have a pocket pair on, I think it was like 10-10-9, and I was up against two people with ace high, and then the turn was a 9, and they're never folding to me. It wasn't people who've never played with me. It was people who play with me a bunch. I just took my medicine and check folded. Then I had an interesting spot where I had jack 9, and I called with a pair and a gutter, and I turned a straight. And I checked it back. I thought me and Gene had nothing. I was correct. So he couldn't call a bet on the turn, but maybe he would bluff the river since I checked back the four card straight. Well, the river was a jack. So now suddenly I'm playing the board. The final board is king, queen, 10, 9, jack. And I have jack 9. And I 2X'd. He checked here. And instead of feeling sorry for myself, my straight got counterfeited, I 2X'd the pot to rep the ace. And it worked. It was a tiny pot, but it worked. So Then I had an interesting spot, and I'm taking another sip of coffee, partly because I was screaming at kids last night to rebound and play defense, and partly because I like coffee. Okay, so I had king queen, and I bet it on a king high board. The turn was an ace, and I checked back, and the river was a king giving me trips, and DK checked, and my hand is almost always best here. I think it's going to be best here 99.9% of the time. But I showed him some mercy. Why? I'm up 10,000 already in the session. I know it's been going very poorly for him. And not only is he my friend, but he's very important for the show. He's a fan favorite. And if the poker experience is just too ugly for someone, they're going to stop playing. Whereas if you give them, take your foot off the gas a little bit against them, well, then it's not such a bad experience, and then maybe they start running better, and they can get a win, and then you can, if they've been winning for a while, then you can battle again. In this moment in time, it just seemed like I didn't need to go for value here, and I just turned over my hand. I don't know how you turn over your head. But, and I know some will be like, well, that's soft play. Yeah, it is soft play. It's totally fine and totally part of the high stakes culture. If you're fucking smart, it is anyways. And yeah, and people say, no, I'll check raise my grandma. I'll take every last dollar from her. Well, that's fine. Your grandma will probably never play with you again. And your grandma will probably love to play with me all the time. Think about that shit. Okay, so interesting hand here. I flop top pair. I have a bad kicker. I have king six. I'm king 5-4, two hearts. I bet, and Nikos raises. Could he have a flush draw? He certainly could. I just decided he didn't, and I was right. He had two pair. This is a good fold. I just folded right there. He had 5-4. I had equity, but, you know, king six against 5-4 on king 5-4. Two hearts is rough. And a lot of that equity, I think, was like the six of hearts in my hand for runner flush, out of position, six high. It's not equity you're going to realize very often. So I like that fold. And then I made another good fold where I had ace five, and I bet on 9-9-5. And Dr. P called, and the turn was an ace. So I go from nines and fives to aces and nines with a five kicker. And I bet again, small. I'm targeting mid pairs. Or straight draws, or flush draws, and he raises me. And I just decide he's got a better ace, and he did. He had ace king. So I went in kind of on one, if you will, and so far I'm making all the right decisions. I think. And then I have a tough spot that's tough for me, and another one where I think Charlie Wilmoth is a very, very skilled poker player, and he's a great commentator. But another one where I didn't see eye to eye. We're playing the 7-deuce game. You win with 7-deuce, you get $900. Everyone owes you 100, and the last person to fold owes you 2. And you have 8 opponents. Okay? So you're incentivized to win a pot with 7-deuce. This game does not favor me in certain ways, in that it's hard. You know, people don't fold to me a ton, especially when I just open preflop. And I decided it wasn't a good time to go for a limp re-raise, so I just raised, and everyone called. And it came queen 9-7 with 2 spades. And me and Gene led into the field. Queen 9-7, 2 spades. Led into the field. I have a pair. Call. The turn's a brick, and he led again, I think, 2,300. About pot. Call. And then the river was another brick, and he jammed. And I went in the tank. And Charlie thought I was setting up a bluff here. Well, maybe in the games that he's playing in, typically, people just lead value hands into the preflop raiser and into the field. In these games, when they do that, when someone just calls from the blinds like 100 ways, and they lead on queen 9-7, 2 spades, they're going to have a combo draw often. They're going to have king jack of spades, jack 10 of spades, king 10 of spades, 10 8 of spades. They might even just have ace x of spades. The rule is it's a draw. The exception to the rule is that it's a value hand. Because with value hands, people are going to check and pray someone bets so they can check raise, and now they can rep the draw and get a bunch of money in with a set, or in this case, two top two. That's what Gene had. He had queen nine. So I never played with him before, so I don't play hands against him with a bunch of history in my memory. I just play against, okay, this is just rich dude poker, and when they lead into the field, after just overcalling a million ways preflop, it's often a fucking draw. So bottom pair is actually good, even though it looks terrible. It's good, often. And so I called once, and then I called again. And then when he shoved, you know, it's very polarized. It's never just top pair. So it's a you know, top two or a set, or it's a misdraw. And like I said, the rule is people are checking top two or a set there. They're checking and praying someone bets, you know, maybe the preflop raiser, maybe someone else. Then they get the check raise, and then the person who bet gets to put them on a draw, and they get all the money in with two pair or a set against one pair. So I was not setting up a bluff at all. I was bluff catching the entire time. And I actually really like it when he commentates, because we do have different views on things. I play a super exploit style based on trends in poker, player frequencies, game flow, and he's a more GTO type player. And I don't know, I thought it was interesting. So I barely folded. Luckily, I folded. I would have been about even again and probably a little steamed up, but I just, the other variable is how often do they triple barrel? And we'd already battled a little bit, so I just thought that maybe that third barrel switches things to something that he actually has the exception to the rule, that he just was leading for value with a big hand the whole time. So just kind of an interesting one. And then Mean Gene bluffs me. I have ace X, and it comes, I think it's ace 10-9, and he was a preflop raiser, and we all check to him, and he bets small. I call, and the turn is, you know, a card doesn't help me, and he overbets. And I have to fold. I have to fold my top pair no kicker, and he just had nothing. But now that I've played with him, I can use this to my advantage next time. But I never play with him. And it's been a real spooky run for Dr. P. He's just flopping sets and losing. He flopped a set against Top Pair and Crazy Drew at Runner Runner to make a straight. And it's just, I think we see this either at the poker table when we're there or on stream, and then our mind represses it immediately. We don't want to believe this about poker, that you can run death, that you can flop the set against the top pair, get the money in and lose, and then you can do it again and again and again. And I see it. I've been there. I spent a whole year. That was part of what led to me hitting rock bottom, is I had a whole year like this where I would get all the fucking money in so good and lose over and over and over. And this is just, you know, Dr. P is just starting to, he's just dipping his toes in those waters, but it's still spooky, and I don't like it for anyone. And then Gene blessed me again. Motherfucking mean Gene. It's a four card straight, and I just have to fold. It favored his range. I can tell that he knows how to play poker now at this point, and it favored his range. And he you know, it just, it's no man's land when the other guy could just have one card for a straight, and you just got to get bluffed there, I think. And I did. And then I flopped trips. I was in there with the 10-3 offsuit. That's a great fucking starting hand. I think Charlie would actually agree with me on that one. And I flopped trips. And this is just something that I, an adjustment I've made. I think it was Jack 3-3. I flopped trips. I'm last to act. And I checked it back. Sure, you can get action from a lot of hands there. A jack or pocket pairs. At least you get one street from pocket pair. But I've just seen so many times where if it's multi-way and it comes jack 3-3, if no one has the jack, you just win nothing. And if you just let any turn card peel off, sure, sometimes someone's going to turn a two-outer and make a boat and you're fucked. But hopefully you can navigate. But what happens is the turn is going to give somebody a flush draw or somebody a straight draw or somebody a pair, and now you can start getting value because you didn't bet the flop. And I just, it's a new thing for me. I like checking back trips on the flop. Unless, of course, it's like 9-9-10 with two diamonds. Like, but this was jack 3-3 rainbow. And the turn was a 6, and now I bet, and Nico's called, and the river is a 4. And then I overbet, and he called with 6-4, 3-pair, and so my plan worked out well. And I slow rolled him. Yeah, and I was feeling good. And then I flopped top and bottom, and I lost to his middle pair. So the slow roll karma gets you sometimes. It's worth it. I had ace-4, came ace-7-4, he had queen-7, he had 7 cocktails at this point, and he bet his middle pair and river trips. I made a nice fold, but you know, it's a stroke of negative variance, but in a session where I'm running very hot overall. And when you're running very hot, you make good decisions. I made a good decision against Yara at ace queen, and she seemed strong. And what is this? She seems strong, white magic, voodoo shit. It's live poker. It's why I've always been good at live poker, even when I'm goofing around and drinking a lot, is I'm hypersensitive. I pick up on what's going on with you. And my kids probably hate it. Like, if something's off with them, I know every single time. And I just keep asking until they tell me. And you know, it's a blessing and a curse. Go to a crowded restaurant, it's a fucking nightmare. You pick up on everyone's energy and conversation. And you're like, let me have 3 beers. And let me just numb this shit. So I picked up on her being very strong. And I thought about shipping it with ace queen. She only had 2K. That's 50 big blinds. Playing 10, 20, 40 with a $20 big blind ante. But I thought she was too strong. And I just called. And it came king high. And she jammed, which was curious. King, jack, X. We are playing the 7-deuce game. This is really going to suck if she has 7-deuce. But I decided she didn't. And I folded. She had pocket king. She flopped top set. That's a fun way to play top set. And I like it. So that's good. When I could have easily lost, you know, 2K and change. I lost 400. And then I had a flush draw. And Nikos was calling, and it just seemed like he might have a better draw, and the board breaked out, and so I just bet small on the river. I got it through. So I'm playing pretty well here. Jeans bluffed me a couple times, but I'm playing pretty well, and I typically like to talk about my best play and my worst play, and we're going to talk about my best play. It's at 227.48. If you want to go to the Max Payne Monday show on Hustle Casino Live on YouTube, 227.48, go there while I take yet another sip of coffee. Okay, so I limp dark all the time. It's a nice way to play poker. It's very social. It's also pretty strategic. You gotta have a big VPIP in these games. And these are the games where if you're opening in early position or just anywhere, what you do is you get a bunch of callers. There's not a ton of three betting, but you get a bunch of callers. And then you're just playing this huge bloated pot with initiative and often out of position. And that's no bueno. Nope. I prefer to be the one that limp calls or limp folds or limp re-raises. I found a good limp re-raise spot. So I limp in there for 40. Yara goes at 200. She doesn't seem as strong this time. Seems just like a button raise. Bunch of people call. Ooh. Good squeeze spot. I look down. Ace, deuce, offsuit. Pretty decent squeeze hand, isn't it, though? I go to 1,300. And she folds quickly. Well, the big D's call. DK and DQ call. Okay? But when people call one raise and then they call the squeeze, they're going to have mid pairs often. That's just some strategy talk. And I don't usually do much strategy talk, but they're going to have mid pairs often that are trying to flop sets, right? They're going to have some other stuff, suited aces and whatnot, but, you know, and some other hands, but they're often going to have mid pairs, especially if they call the first one quickly and then call your squeeze quickly, and they did. So here we go. There's 45-20 in the pot. This is how you know you're spewy. There's 45-20 in the pot. You look down, and you're the guy with initiative with ace-deuce offsuit. Fuck yeah. Queen, deuce, three. It's on me. I think they checked to me. Yeah, they did check to me. 45-20 in the middle. Okay, Danny has me covered. He's crushing. That's good. I want him to crush. I have about 8K. So I'm downswinging a little bit. Variance has turned on me a little bit, but I'm still up a little bit. Queen, deuce, three, I got bottom pair. That's equity. That is fucking equity right there. It's a pair, and it's also backdoor straight draw. So if you have to get the money in, it's not the end of the fucking world. And likely, Danny, who's going to be next to act after I bet, often he's going to have a mid pair. Often. And so is DQ. Or DQ is actually wider in this spot than Danny. But DQ only has 20. DQ has half pot behind. I don't care. If you got me beat, you get the fucking money. DQ. DK has me covered. So he's my main concern. I asked DQ, how much you got? 2,500. Damn. Okay. I'm not worried about you anymore. I look at DK. He has me covered. I want to continuation bet here. I want to apply max pressure. I want to fold out every pair, pocket fours to jacks, right? And I'll find out if I ran into a set or ace queen, but I think ace queen might have three bet the first time around. So I'll find out. Or king queen, but king queen would have had to think about my squeeze a little bit. So I think it's a pocket pair. And I'm going to bet $3,000, a key number, because if you bet anything less than that, it doesn't seem that big. There are thresholds, and it's very psychological. In many games, like in a 5-2-5 or 5-10 game, sometimes you got to get to 1,000 to get them to fold. It's just 980 doesn't make them fold, but 1,000 does. Well, that's just human beings being human beings. And Danny, on other nights, this would be an atrocious continuation bet by me. On other nights where he's just gambling it up and never folding, This is terrible. Ah, but I know he's trying to win. And I've seen it all session long, which is just a couple hours. But if there was ever a time to bluff him, it's right now. He just got these chips. He doesn't want to lose them. He's trying to turn things around in poker. And he's got fucking DQ behind him. And it's that threshold 3K. And I have 5K behind. And it's just a brutal fucking bluff catching spot. And I get it through. I give him to fold eights. And DQ had nothing. It's my best play. Why? Just because I recognized everything. When Yara was strong, I just called with ace queen. When she was weak, and that's just reading her, I was able to squeeze with ace deuce. Sure, I would have loved to just take it down, but now I'm in position with 45-20 in there, and I flop bottom pair, and sure, my hand might be good, but I probably need to start bluffing here. I'm up against a lot of pairs, and pairs suck for bluff catching, and the guy that has the chips is, he's got a guy behind him, so I can kind of really put him in a pickle here. I can really put pressure on him, and on other nights, I would never think of it. On this night, yeah, this is the time to bluff my man, and it worked. So, some live poker shit there. And then I flopped the bottom set. I almost never flop sets on this show. Pocket nines, ace, jack, nine, and there was a flush draw available. Here we go. So, I don't bet trips often, but a set bottom set is a much different story, especially on ace high board. I bet it, neither of them had anything. Fuck it. And then we do double board PLO bomb pots to pay collection when a new dealer comes in. 2K cap. And so you put 100 in, then 2K post flop. I lost 2,100 in an automatic spot where I had plenty of equity and I lost. Poor me. And then I made a pretty, I felt like a good play, but looking back, it's not that great. It came 10-10-7. I had 7-8. I called once, crazy Drew. And then the ace came and he bet again and I folded. I just got to put him on a 10. He had a 10. I made some more. Nice folds, and then I got a nice double up against Drew. He's been winning huge pots against me. I turned a straight against him, and he was open-ended with his pair, and by the time the river came, the pot was too big for him to fold. And then it's time for my worst play at 3:23:05. So there's a 30-minute countdown. We're almost 3 hours in the show. They all limp. Nikos is on one. Like, I'm kind of on one, just feeling good, but walking that tightrope. He's on one, like he already fell off that rope several drinks ago. And he's just making it 100. He's straddling 100 every single hand. So this game's playing pretty big. And people limp, and Gene goes to 700, and I've been kind of card dead. And another thing that's happening is the game is playing very slowly. When you have someone who's hammered, the game plays very slowly. And if you're a grizzled vet like I am, that's tilting, even if you're winning. Well, I call 700 with queen-jack offsuit. Fuck it. Bring everyone in. Try and flop something. Try and win a huge one. It comes 3-5-8 in this bloated pot. I think there's 3,600 in there. That's not good for queen-jack. Just check. The turn's a 9. Okay, I have a gut shot, but I'm not betting here, like, against all these opponents. There's flush draw available. Nah, check. The river's an 8, and I just get impatient. You got to take your medicine and just check and fold that queen-jack. I bet a third pot, just like, you know, repping an 8 or a 9. Like, look, I do go for thin value all the time, but like, I just knew it was terrible as soon as I did it. And Yara flipped it on me. She made a good read and a good call with pocket sixes after Nikos folded trips because he didn't realize he had trips, probably because he was wasted. And that's live poker right there. But I knew when I bet it, it was terrible. I just was impatient because the game was playing too slowly and I wasn't repping anything. And if you don't, you got to respect your opponents somewhat. You got to rep something if you're going to bet $1,200. You don't always have to rep anything if you're going to bet like $7,000, but $1,200, you got to. Okay, so good call by her. And then I balanced a spot where I called once with 10-7 on King 10-5, two hearts, and the turn was an offsuit 7, and me and Gene bet again, and I thought he had top pair or over pair perhaps, and he was pre-flop razor, and I think he bet like 1,300, and I had like 7 or 8K, and I just thought like, well, I could raise to like 3K, and then I have like baby dick bet behind. No, I just jam like I do with a combo draw, and so it's the rare spot in live poker that I balance. And this is what I did in 2008 when I moved to Las Vegas and I started playing uncapped, is I would jam either with the huge draw or the setter two pair when I was obviously up against one pair, and then it's no man's land for the opponent. You know, against my range, they're in trouble, but against my hand, they're going to be flipping often and sometimes dead. And he made a good fold. He had king jack. That's a good fold by Mean Gene. I raised ace jack, and I just flopped nothing against two opponents, and I just checked it back, and I took my medicine. I don't do that very well. Sometimes, you know, you can't win every pot. And I played a lot of heads up in my life, and that was good and bad. I won a lot of money, but then it made full ring tough. Just seemed too slow, and you're used to battling for every pot. You gotta just take your medicine and just let someone else win sometimes. Then I 3-bet queen 10 suited, and I got another good flop. King deuce 3. Like, I love when you're the guy with like the ace king in your range and no one else has it, and I bet 2200, and you know, I took it down. So I manufactured quite a bit, and then I made a good call against DQ on the turn. He had a huge draw. He sucked out, but he had a huge draw. That's fine. But the point is, I made a good call on the turn with third pair, which was correct. And then I had an interesting hand at 508, if you want to check that out. So we're 4 hours and 8 minutes into the show. That's wrong. We're 4 hours and 38 minutes into the show. And Dr. P limps, and I raised 9-8 suited, and it's four-way action, 600 in the middle. Deuce 3-4 with one heart. I have 9-8 of hearts. We all check. The turn's the ace of hearts. Okay, and I pick up a flush draw, and Dr. P bets 200 into 600, and I say, I hate this. I want you to win, but I think I got you beat. I call. I'm just setting up some like tiny bluff on the river and just to rep the ace. And Danny calls, and the river is such an interesting card. It's the five of hearts. So just to rewind real quick, Dr. P limped. I raised maybe 140, four-way action, plus whatever the 20 is out there or whatever. You know, some blinds out there. 600 in there. 2-3-4, I check back in position. There's one heart, but I don't, you know, I'm not continuation betting this. No. Turns the ace of hearts. Okay, I pick up the flush draw. I call the 200. I'm getting 4-1 on a call. And DK overcalls. And he's in a different mode now. And the river's the five of hearts. I make my flush. And so there's 1,200 in the pot. And DK bets 400. Okay, this seems like maybe he has a six. Okay, and so I'm obviously going to raise. And Dr. P raises to $3,000. Whoa. $3,000 from 400 with 1,200 in there heading to the river. This is a massive fucking raise. What do you do with the 9-high flush? I don't know. It was the toughest spot I faced in a while. And I just tried to think. You know, when you get in tough spots, you think like, well, I've played so much and I've been in similar spots. What do they usually have in this spot? And they usually have the nuts. But then it's like, damn, it's just so like, obviously I'm under-repped, but it's not a heads-up pot. You know what I mean? It's a three-way pot. What the fuck is he raising from 400 to 3,000? Smaller foot? No, I don't think so. Fold. DK calls with a six. Dr. P has 6-7. Oh my God. I folded the best hand. That's a sin on stream. And the chat pros gave me the business, as they should. But it's tough. It's tougher than you think. It's so often this is going to be the nut flush. The guy, you know, that knows you have a straight when he's got the nut flush and like the dynamics are there. That raise is so huge. If he raises smaller, I'm never folding, obviously. I might even re-raise. But this raise is just too big, and it worked as a bluff. And then he got the best of both worlds. He got me to fold the best hand and DK to call with worse. Damn it. So, yeah, I finished the stream with 60% VPIP. And then we played after at the watch party, the first Monday typically of every month. Sometimes it's the second Monday. We have a watch party upstairs. It's a beautiful thing. We start at 3 p.m. We got 2-3 No Limit. We got $5 double board PLO bomb pots. The people from The Lucky Lady come over. And people that love the show come over. And, you know, the show's on the screen or all the screens with sound on. And we do giveaways. And I have the players pitch in, especially the ones who won. And Crazy Drew auctions off his jacket. And we raised, I think, $1,140 for people that played. And they got raffle tickets. And it's a party up there. And I've played super late up there and battled in big No Limit. You know, our game just keeps going and gets bigger. But I was so burnt out. And I think everyone was. DQ didn't even play. And that's normally the one I battle with. And I didn't want DK to have a really bad night. He was about even or winning a little bit. So we just kind of, you know, chilled and didn't play that big. And I ended up winning $12,600 when it was all said and done. And I left there around midnight. And again, if you want to hear what happens next, or if you want to, you know, listen to the whole journey ever since I hit the bottom, and, you know, with many looks back as to how, it's patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer. That's the content. It's good falling asleep content. I talk slowly. And it's a weird story. And my voice is typically soothing. Maybe not after I'm not, maybe not during basketball season, but yeah. That's what you do if you want to be a patron. And the last thing I'm going to do is talk about my goals. I set 3 goals typically every year. And I didn't do a great job setting them at the beginning of this year. And I haven't done even a decent job achieving them. And I'm going to own that. So when I hit the bottom in 2017, I was over $250,000 in debt, and I had to initiate a long overdue divorce. And so that put me without a residence, which you could say is homeless, and I had no bankroll, and I still had to keep my kids in their nice spot because I'd always lived and spent like a, you know, NBA player, but I got to keep them in their spot. You can't just, you know, you can, but I didn't want to, you know, uproot them at all. And that was my primary goal. And I've achieved it with help of others and getting side jobs and adding new jobs. I was not a podcaster at all at the time, just a poker player. I became a podcaster. And I got the debt down to 112.5 to start the year. And last year was a great year for me until the Jack 4 shit. It really threw me off in all ways. I stopped playing as well as I was playing. I started experiencing anger, like real fucking anger. One night I even felt evil, which I'd never felt before. I felt evil. I wanted bad things to happen to people. Never felt like that before, and it's a fucking weird feeling. But anyways, I started sleeping like shit, eating like shit, and I gained a bunch of weight, and anyways, I thought I would be done. That's why this one has the intro and outro, the end. I thought this was the end of sessions. I thought it was, you know, a 6-season podcast that we finally make this impossible comeback after 6 years, but that's not going to happen. And I guess when I'm out of debt, that's when the journey's over and it's time to focus on something, you know, building wealth at that point and doing good things with it. But started at 112.5, wanted to go to zero, and I'm actually at 193.275. So I am staked when I play currently. I went off stake and got whacked, ran really bad. I also lost a lot of money on the Nick Airball, Matt Berkey heads up match, and I still have a very expensive life. And I take care of a lot of people, and I feel good about that. But I'm not even close to the goal of zero debt, 193.275. I could go on a heater and you know, get there quickly, but that hasn't really happened this year. And I'm still having a nice year, I guess, in poker, but I think it's smart that I'm just building up all my other grinds, my other side hustles or whatever you want to call them. I wanted to win 35 times on stage because I do have backing corporation people that are patrons at a certain tier. They get to buy my action when I play it, and I'm a favorite. Whatever you think of my VPIP or how many beers I drink or certain plays I make, I just win. Just fucking win. And people don't think I win. If it weren't for those websites that track people's winnings, no one would think I won. That's how I like it. But I do. And so I want to win 35 times. I've won 30 out of 51. So about 60%. I want to win about 70%. I'm not going to hit that either. I'm not even going to play 5 more times this year. And the last goal is another pretty big joke. I was my heaviest ever going into this year, 257.7. I wanted to get it down to 219. I got to be, you know, it sucks being uncomfortable in your clothes. It sucks also when you're on stream and you're puffy. And it's also not good for your health. So there's part of it. You feel good when you cut some weight. But also you got to look out for your health. And I'm no spring chicken anymore. And so I wanted to get it down to 219. I weighed myself before I hit record, my heaviest ever, 261.9. So I'm going to have to continue this podcast. There's going to be a season 7 at least. So be it. I wanted to be done. This podcast is my baby. It's my third child. But I write every single day for it. And then I record twice a week. And I do a lot of reviewing as well. And it's a labor of love. But at some point, I need to start living my life again instead of just examining it. But it's made a lot of sense. When you're a total shit show, and I always have been, the only way to become less of a shit show, a functioning shit show, is to really examine your life and just not be scared of the things that have happened to you. Maybe when you're a kid or after, and not be scared of the things that aren't great about you, and just own it and then do what you can do. But yeah, there's going to be a season 7, and I'll set better goals. And I know I'm going to be very focused on health next year because, it can get scary when you have such a stressful life and work every single day. And your weight's a little bit out of control. That's no bueno. But having said that, it's now 12:45 p.m. on Thirsty Thursday, December 7th. And I'm going to produce this and I'll release it to the public. And then I'm going to shower and get dressed and head up to the Hustler and probably eat something that's not that healthy and start drinking beers and start soul reading some motherfuckers. This is the end, beautiful friend. I hope you enjoyed this drop of sessions. This is the end. Head on over to patreon.com/DGAFPokerPlayer to get the entire story. When you sign up for all the content, you also get membership to DGAF Community, an online community of communal folk. I hope to see you over there. Otherwise, I'll never look into your eyes again. Just kidding. That shit was dramatic. But seriously, we are building something beautiful at DGAF Community. No nits, which means no parasites, no trolls, no haters, no judgment. Just two-way streets. Equality, acceptance, and lots of fun. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?